Guys, we have some exciting news.
The 40s Formula is going live on August 14th at the Green Collective at Funan Mall.
We are going to dive deep into the science, myths, and struggles around sugar addiction.
Breakfast and coffee are on us, thanks to the generous sponsors, Guzman y Gomez.
It's a small and intimate event with only 15 spots, so it's first come, first served.
Tickets are only $20, and that includes breakfast and $5 towards your purchase at the Green Collective.
Come and join us for a conversation that might change the way you eat, think, and feel.
Boys are falling behind. They're falling behind academically. They're falling behind emotionally. We have a mental health crisis in men. We have one in boys too. We know that suicide kills more men under 50 than anything else. The boy issue was invisible to me until I became a boy mom. A better world for boys and men is a better world for girls and women too.
Social media and the internet has just accelerated a process. This generation of parents struggles to let go and lose control. How can we help them do riskier things?
Boys do struggle with impulse control, with their ability to regulate their emotions. They're about 18 months behind girls, usually.
I think traditionally schools have prized typically female traits, haven't they?
You're right. 92% of prisons are filled with men.
Men and boys, we're taught to validate our worth through achievements. The negative impact could be that boys or men feel more worthless.
Hey, hey, and welcome to the 40s Formula, your go-to place for insightful discussions on navigating the 40s and thriving in this transformative decade.
We're your hosts, Jasmine and Amanda, two women that are passionate about exploring the challenges and adventures that come with turning 40 and what lies ahead. All right, before we dive into today's episode, let's talk about something that makes our lives way easier.
And tastier, because let's be honest, between work, workouts, and you know, life, we don't exactly have time to wrestle the trolleys at the supermarket.
Which is why we've been with the Meat Club since the beginning of the 40s Formula.
Yep, they've had our back since episode one, and tasty dinners on our plates too.
With the Meat Club, you skip the supermarket chaos and get premium nutritious proteins delivered to your door on your schedule.
It's a subscription that actually simplifies life. No last minute grocery runs, just quality meats, seafood, fruits and veggies always ready when you are.
Their mission says it all. Good food is the foundation of a great life. And with the Meat Club's delivery, it's coming literally to your doorstep.
This is where quality meets convenience and we're here for it.
All right, TMC drop check. Let's see what we got here. Oh, well, first things first, you can't have Taco Tuesdays without Snapper.
But what about salmon? Because that's definitely our favorite.
Okay, fair enough. But chicken breast, that's the workhorse we're eating every single day.
I think it's all about the chicken thighs.
Oh my gosh, chicken thighs. I don't know if I could get one down myself, but I do know that this mince makes a mean burger.
Who wants burgers when you can have a grass-fed beef eye fillet steak?
Okay, that is amazing. But with that steak, I would definitely be serving this delicious broccoli and spicing it up with these chilies.
Okay, you definitely won there. I have got some coriander, some cherry tomatoes. I mean, check out the color on those. And for dessert, strawberries.
We also got some fruit for the kids, which they will love. And one of the coolest thing about the subscription, an amazing quality chef's knife and a beautiful wooden cutting board.
Honestly, it's the easiest way to eat well without overthinking it.
So if you're ready to upgrade your meals without adding to your mental load, head over to themeatclub.com.sg.
Sign up for the flexible subscription. No lock-ins, just high-quality proteins delivered straight to you.
And don't forget to use our code TFF12 to save $12 off your first order.
We'll drop it in the show notes or you can find it on our Instagram.
The Meat Club, where quality meets convenience.
Today, we're turning the spotlight into a conversation that has been making waves since the Netflix drama Adolescence. And that is, what does it mean to be a boy and eventually a man in today's world? Are we really listening to our boys or are we still telling them to man up and just get on with it? And as a mom of three boys myself, I feel this conversation is especially close to home because like so many parents, I want to understand the pressures they are facing and what we can do to support them to grow into healthy, competent, connected and emotionally strong men. So with us today, we've got two brilliant minds. We have Dr. Neil Forrest, a GP at Osler Health, who is a preferred doctor for adolescents' health. And we also have Dr. Emma Waddington, a psychotherapist and the co-founder of Us Therapy. And today we're going to be unpacking identity, emotion, influence, and everything in between. And this is one of those episodes that I feel every parent, every teacher, and every teen will need to listen to. So welcome. Welcome to the 40s Formula. Before we get going, I feel like the first question I want to ask is, why do we need to have this conversation today?
Why? Gosh, so many reasons, really. Neil and I have been on a, what would we call it, on a run. We've had now conversations with, I think it's 6 or 7 schools on boys, really, because we need to be thinking about our boys. Boys are falling behind. They're falling behind academically. They're falling behind emotionally. We have a mental health crisis in men. We have one in boys, too. We know that suicide kills more men under 50 than anything else. So we need to be having these conversations because we're doing something wrong. And I think the conversation needs to be had by mothers. And really, if I'm honest, I talk about this a lot. The boy issue was invisible to me until I became a boy mom. Up until then, I thought, you know, girls had it harder. And I'm not going to say that as women, we don't have a hard time, because we do. And there's still a lot of work to do in that area. But I don't think that means we neglect the well-being of boys and men. And I'm quite passionate about this because I believe that a better world for boys and men is a better world for girls and women, too. Like, why do we have to prioritize one over the other? There's no competition here. We don't have to make it into one. We need to think about all of us, because it's an us problem, really.
I think you're 100% right. And just like you mentioned, I never thought of it as an issue. Mm. You know, I was always for like, oh, women need to do this and girls need to do this. Now I've got 3 boys myself and I'm thinking, what can I do to help them? Because you're right, they are struggling in so many areas. Dr. Neil, why do you think that this is an issue?
I think it's become an issue that we can talk about. I think it's been an issue for a long time. And I think a lot of boys and men have felt that way. But it's not really been acceptable for a long time to talk about some of those challenges, because the focus, as it rightly should be in society, is always on groups that are marginalized or struggling. And that's never really been men before.
Absolutely.
And I think even though you could see the roots of these problems taking hold 10 years ago, if you tried to have this conversation, people would say, you're talking about,
mad.
We don't need to be worried about men and boys. Mm. And I think probably the other thing is, like so many areas of mental health and well-being and the things we see in our children, social media and the internet has just accelerated a process. And maybe these things were building at a low level. Maybe with the equalization of opportunity over time between men and women, society would have adapted to that organically, but then the internet just dials everything up to 100 and turns on the accelerator. And so I think societal changes happen at such a rate now that people struggle, systems, schools, parents, teachers struggle to adapt quickly enough to what's happening.
Even parents, you know, like I feel as parents, we don't know what's going on. You know, we can see what's happening, but really deep down inside, it's really hard to see. I feel like they've got a new language. There's just so much stuff that we just can't keep up with. So what can parents do to try to help the boys in this situation?
Not knowing exactly what our young people are doing all the time and finding their ways of communicating a little bit alien is nothing new, right? That's been going on. for years, and if you'd sat our parents down, they'd probably say exactly the same. What's changed, I guess, it's a difficult one, isn't it? I think our generation of parents, so I'm a bit older than you guys, I'm lumping myself in with you
there.
That's
all right. Well, this,
come on in.
This generation of parents struggles to let go and lose control over situations. And so there is a theory, I think we've spoken about this, haven't we, Emma, where we've focused so much on making the physical environment as safe and danger-free, and we've been incredibly successful at doing that for our kids, and we've kind of taken our eye off all the other risks they may be taking or things they might be doing. I don't know, I'm one of 3 boys, and I just feel like my parents and their generation They seem more comfortable with letting us go a little bit.
Yeah.
And I think we in the modern world struggle with that.
I was saying to my husband, actually, that my son, who's going to turn 10 in a few months' time, that we should now probably let him get on a bus, maybe make a trip down to the shop. Mm. And I know I was doing that at much younger age. Yeah. But
and not in Singapore.
No, not in Singapore.
Where that is an absolutely safe thing to do across the board.
Yeah. One of the parents at the last talk we did, at, I think it was at the German school.
Brilliant question.
One of the questions
I loved it.
Said, how can we help them take more risks? And most of the questions were around how can we keep them safe? How can we stop them doing this? And this, it was a dad, wasn't it?
Yeah,
said, Singapore's too safe. How can we help them do riskier things? And I thought it was a good question. Yeah. You know, it's always a balance, isn't it? You don't want them to be an unnecessary danger. But
yeah,
I think children in general, but boys in particular, thrive by pushing boundaries and taking risks sometimes.
That's so true. Yeah, I mean, this is something that is constantly at odds in my own home. So I live in a multi-generational home where my husband is Singaporean. We live with his parents and they're traditional Chinese Singaporean. Mm. And so our ability to handle risk is quite different because I'm American. I grew up in a traditional American home where, to give you an idea of our parenting, my parents' parenting style, my dad always said, you know how they got helicopter parents, right, that hover over the kids? He's like, we were submarine parents. Every now and then, throw up the periscope, all good, back under the surface. And that should tell you a bit about how I was raised, you know, quite liberally. And so it's really, it comes into play. My kids are very small. 1, 3, and 5 are my kids' ages. But particularly my middle boy, who's 3. He's at the age now where he's jumping off everything, running into walls. The other day, he smashed a glass bottle on the floor just to see what it would do. You know, not out of anger, just like, let's see what happens. Why is everyone so up in arms about glass? And it drives my parents-in-law crazy. Yeah. And so what's been difficult for us, and I don't know if this is something you can give, you know, intercultural, multi-generational homes a little tip of the hat here, is how do you manage when the expectations of caregivers are so different in the avoidance of risk or acceptance of risk around our boys?
You see that even between
partners.
Partners, right. Yeah, the classical experiments where they would let a parent watch a child climb a climbing frame. On average, a mum will stop them 3 or 4 rungs lower.
Seconds of intervention, right?
Then the dad will let them to go for. And so, and of course, you see that across cultures as well. I think for you guys as parents and grandparents, it's probably about having very open conversations about what your expectations are, and that's just a going to be a challenge in so many different ways. But I think ultimately it's for you and your husband as the parents to make the calls together as to where the boundaries are and what's the right, that there is no right way to do it. There's no single way. It'll be different for all three of your kids.
Yeah, fair.
And I think one of the challenges with what we get asked. Emma does a great bit when we do these talks on neurodivergence, and people really want to know about that. Okay, how do I do this with a child who has ADHD, or how do I do this with a child who has autism? And the problem is they're very broad brush terms, aren't they? If you've met a kid with autism, you've just met one kid with autism.
Yeah,
and tell you what the next one's going to be like, really. Absolutely. So as parents and teachers, we've really got to get to know them as individuals and work out what makes them tick. And I think what makes a lot of boys tick is different.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we struggle with.
And that's the complexity. And just coming back to your piece on, you know, risk-taking and boys and the fact that we've become more and more protective of children. And I think that is particularly striking in Singapore when it is so safe. I think boys more and more need to be getting out there, taking their own risks as safe as possible. And instead, we're keeping them indoors or doing tuition or doing all these things that actually, if we think of developmentally, boys do struggle with impulse control, with their ability to regulate their emotions. They're about 18 months behind girls, usually.
Yeah, I did mention smashing a bottle on the floor, right?
Yeah, exactly. But he's 3. If he was doing this at 18, I have another conversation.
I mean, to be fair, it wouldn't surprise me if my son just
actually,
had to
you
do
know
it.
What? It's experimental. And isn't it wonderful? This is why I love, I mean, I've got 2 boys, and I just love boys. Like, they teach me so much about living really fully, sometimes too fully. And I'll have to sort of, I use my husband, I think, is also a bit on the sort of north of risk-taking than I'd like him to be. So I have to adjust, and I'll sort of reflect to him, you know, this is their idea. Is it a good idea? Because my knee jerk is, no, we're not doing this. This is like really bad. I'll ask him, and then I'll kind of find a compromise between me and him, because I think him, he's too far out there personally, but he'd probably argue otherwise. And he's one of three boys. I'm one of three girls. Oh, so I think that also has an impact on our parenting. Like, girls are generally more conservative. Our sort of prefrontal cortex, the front of our brain develops, comes on air much quicker than boys. We're talking about those 18 months, but it can really vary. Some boys are behind that, some boys are ahead of that. But it means that we sort of think things through a little faster. But that doesn't mean that the boy's decision making is wrong. And I think that's what we need to think as mothers and educators and in our community, that just because it looks like a bad idea doesn't make it a bad idea always.
So I think traditionally schools have prized typically female traits,
yes,
haven't they?
You're right. They still do.
Being organized, listening, paying
sitting
attention,
still.
Sitting still.
I mean, those are great things.
Those are great things.
Well, it's easy.
If you put yourself in a teacher's shoes, that's what you want, right? Yeah, that's what makes your life easier. Yeah. Most primary school teachers are women.
That's a problem.
And so it's a difficult balance to strike, because do we say that the boy that's disrupting the class or tearing the room apart, carry on doing what you're doing? Sometimes it sounds like we're saying, don't socialize your children, don't teach them what normal behavior and interactions is about. And it's important for them to develop those things, because if they can't get on with other kids and make people like them and want to listen to them, then they're going to struggle in later life. So that those, it is a difficult balance.
Sorry, Neil and I can have this conversation on our own. Just go on. We have it so regularly. But I love that thought, that actually what we're inviting children to do is be really smart at reading the context.
Yeah.
Right? It's not a description of what is right or wrong, but it's more about what's right or wrong in this moment. Like when I'm with grandma, what should I be doing? I'd probably be sort of more mindful about how I behave.
Yes.
And obviously a three-year-old, that's incredibly sophisticated, but that is a life skill.
Yeah.
Asking people to regulate and know when to, you know, when is it okay to shout and when is it not okay, is a really important interpersonal skill. And I think that what we have done with boys is say, you're just wrong. Mm. Your ideas are bad. You're not thinking straight. You need to sort yourself out. I mean, boys are much more likely to get expelled from school, to get labeled with a behavioral diagnosis, than girls who are doing exactly the same things. So it's not just that boys are more likely to do it, but even when, you know, girls do it, they don't get the same consequences. Boys get more punished. Mm-hmm. And as we know, they're less likely to finish school, etc. Like 92% of prisons are filled with men.
Yeah.
There's probably a good reason for that. But there's also something to be, you know, said about how we label boys and men's behavior as acceptable or unacceptable, and how we start to become a bit broader and a bit more flexible. And because, you know, 50% of the planet is male, 50% is female, we need to be able to accommodate a broader range of behavior across all contexts. Yeah. And we need to begin with schools, or at least schools is an important one to address, because that's where we're getting, you know, they're starting a journey that is a long journey.
So what can schools do to help boys thrive? Because like you mentioned earlier, that the boys are falling behind.
Mm,
so
they really are.
What would work in a school environment to help them, I guess, not fall behind, you know, to get ahead?
There's two sort of strands to that. You can help boys by teaching them what might be quote unquote termed as more female behaviors and ways of communicating. Mm-hmm. So you can give them the language to try and express their emotions and not suppress them or find other ways to vent them. So you can teach boys early about the words they can use to describe their emotions, that talking about the way they feel can be helpful. And then I think you can also accept that there are differences with a lot of boys, and so giving them ways to learn and express. You know, they tend to like doing things rather than thinking about things, giving them more action-based things. And maybe the way we validate them, I think, so the traditional view is that men and boys, we're taught to validate our worth through achievements. Yeah. What do we, you know, what have we achieved? What have we won? How much do we earn? What's our job? How can we provide or protect? And not just who we are and that people love us because we exist and they just love us for who we are. And so I think there's a little bit of maybe teaching boys to exist in a woman's world, and then there's also allowing them to still be boys. Yeah. Did either of you guys go to single sex schools?
No, I went to a mixed school, but my husband is one of three, like like your husband and yourself. Yeah. He went to a boys' school because we've had this conversation about when the boys get older, what would be better for them? Mm. Would it be better for them to go to a mixed school or a boys' school? And initially we decided mixed school, and I think we were thinking it might be better for them not to feel like, you know, the females' sex is something, you know, that you can't talk to because it's like, oh my God, you know, there are girls there. But actually now I think if we switch it and we look at it from a different context, from a learning environment, maybe being in a environment where they're not going to be disturbed and they can be themselves might be a better thing. Did you go to a boys' school?
I and my two brothers went to an all-boys school. Mm. And I wouldn't sort of particularly promote one over the other. Mm. But it's certainly true that I think in all-boys schools, you get to sort of essentially be stupid idiots all together and make all your mistakes in an all-male environment. And there are disadvantages, I'm sure. But there are some advantages to being in that environment and just sort of through certain developmental phases. I think, or there certainly were for me, with regards to what Emma said about some girls being 18 months ahead in terms of emotional development. If you take the oldest girl in a class and the youngest boy, that could be it's 2.5 year difference in maturity. And I think one of the things you notice in adolescence in the drama is that the boy and his friends look and sound very young and immature, and the girls that they've been associating with look like and sound like young women. They've clearly chosen that 13-year-old of age on purpose. A lot of girls most girls would have been expected to hit puberty by that point. Many boys wouldn't, so there's striking physical differences as well.
I was reading actually that the girls are entering puberty sooner and boys are entering it later. Like the gap is getting even greater.
And what's interesting what you said, you know, my husband did not go to an all-boys school, but guess what he did do? The army. You know, he's Singaporean, so he did his mandatory army service. It's funny, right, that the army is 2 years and there's this 18-month developmental gap, and the army's happening just before kind of the completion of the prefrontal cortex development, right? And it's like all those things matter. And I honestly think, like so many, you guys would, I'm the most patriotic Singaporean that's not Singaporean, but this is where I think Singapore and other countries that do this have it right, is that they basically take men out at this, you know, very kind of volatile age, 18 to 20, right, and allow them to kind of catch up while experiencing the benefits of being in that all-male environment that you mentioned.
I've had exactly the same thought. It's smart. I don't think it's deliberate. I mean, I think they're doing it for defense.
Deliberate for defense, and then the social benefit happened. I think they're like, let's keep this. You know,
because then maybe you come out of national service and you're hitting college, university, at exactly the same maturity as the girls that are starting at 18, 18 and a half.
And again, you know, college and uni, absolutely. And I think from a Singapore social development stance, you know, marriage and family, I think that, you know, that's where it's like now they're more ready for the potential, you know, being a partner in marriage that is more successful and, you know, all the incentives that Singapore offers to that side. And I think, again, the army kind of plays the role of the all-boys school in this. You know.
And I think it probably plays a role in giving, so obviously it's a focus, it's very action based, it's doing stuff, and it's gives you value wherever you've come from, whatever you're going to do next, you're all contributing to something that the nation values, and it gives you a sense of worth, I think.
I have to put a butt in, I'm afraid.
Go for it.
The butt psychologist it up, girl. In me always has a depends. It's the most annoying characteristic of psychologists. But I guess for me, all boys school, national service, it depends the kind of boy that you have. Mm. I mean, there is a narrative that boys need to be strong and they have to be physically strong emotionally strong. And that narrative can be reinforced in men and boy communities. And so if you have a boy who isn't physically strong, who is emotionally more delicate, you know, that could be a really poor match. So I think, like everything, it depends on the child. I've seen lots of boys really struggle in all boys schools, and I've seen lots of victims of national service. So I think, like everything, it depends on the needs of the individual. And I think some boys do really well around girls. I'm a big proponent of mixed co-ed versus single sex, because I do think that we need to live together. And I think perhaps it's a bit overambitious, but I think we should just get better at adapting to differences. Just like we have a neurodivergence conversation and movement, really, this neuroaffirming, I think gender affirming, like, it's so nice to finally talk about gender differences. Once upon a time, we couldn't. It was not allowed. So we're moving forward and thinking about, you know, how we're different and how we meet such different needs. And I think we can be more sophisticated and evolve, even though it's difficult.
Earlier, Neil mentioned that the sort of the old notion of men and boys was like protector and being strong. And now women are in a place and girls are in a place where they don't need someone to protect them. They don't need someone to provide for them. So with this sort of change in role, how is that affecting boys and I guess young men as well?
The negative impact could be that boys or men feel more worthless or less useful when it's put in those terms. I think the way to put a positive take on it would be, so a lot of what psychologists do, correct me if I'm wrong here, but a lot of behavioral therapy is about reframing unproductive thoughts, right? So we think these things that we think are true and they don't help us, and we reframe them and into something else. And so protecting and providing could be reframed into serving. You know, you can still, you don't have to physically protect someone or financially provide for someone to still fulfill those roles of someone who sort of gets value from serving or helping other people. And so I think we just need to give boys and men a different way of expecting them not to have those traits, I think is unrealistic. It's how do we channel those into something positive? Because the flip side to what this boy in adolescence has gone down the online rabbit hole of hearing is that if you don't do those things, you're not a real man. That women think they don't need protecting, but really they do. That men should be providing for women and women should be, you know, all these well-known sort of tropes that are being sold to young men now as the answer to the problems they might be facing. I think we need to reframe that into something more meaningful and positive for them.
Amanda, can we talk about how clean Guzmany Gomez's food is? Like, truly clean, not the it has lettuce so it's healthy kind of clean.
Oh, totally. GYG is on another level. There's no preservatives, no artificial colors, no weird additives. It is just proper, real food.
I read that they went through 21 versions of their corn chips before they found the one. Now that's commitment.
And they fly in their avocados and tomatoes daily from Australia to Singapore. That is the level of commitment I want in my food.
You can taste it, whether it's the burritos, the bowls, or those chipotle seasoned fries. You just feel good after eating it.
And it's really why my entire family keeps going back. Clean is the new healthy, and GYG has been leading that charge since day one.
They've literally reinvented fast food. Who says it has to be dodgy and deep fried? Not on GYG's watch.
Can I ask you, though, are these well-known tropes now? I feel like I was introduced to the tropes by watching Adolescence. They were not well-known to me. This 80-20 rule and, you know, this kind of like, you know, hyper-masculine underground.
And the incel and all that.
Yeah, this is all new to me. Right. So it is this, am I just obviously behind the times?
I just, these guys have been around for quite a long time now.
They've always been around. Yeah. I mean, to a certain extent, just not on social media.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, Andrew Tate obviously being the, you know, the headliner there. But like, what ages are the most kind of susceptible to this online presence?
All ages can be vulnerable to it. But I think the developing brain is far more suggestive and susceptible to any kind of misinformation or whatever you want to call it. Yeah. So, you know, I think if you look at someone like the rise of Jordan Peterson, say, look at the demographics that attend his events, would be men of all ages, certainly not exclusively young men, but it seemed to have particular resonance in, I would say, that, you know, late adolescent sort of age
even
bracket.
Young though. I was looking at some stats that are really quite striking, that this kind of manosphere or this radical masculinity content is being pushed, unfortunately, by algorithms. Mm-hmm. And about 69%, I was reading, of 11 to 15-year-olds have had exposure to this content.
Wow. Mm.
And only about sort of 50 to 60% of which hadn't searched for it. So it's being pushed, even though they don't look for it. And obviously it's really provocative. And sort of coming back to your point, you know, some of these dilemmas that our boys face. And I think it's genuine that, you know, it was really black and white what men needed to do. They needed to provide. They needed to be strong. I don't think everybody met that criteria once upon a time. But now it's more complicated because actually, since the Me Too movement, I think there's been a shift where boys are getting really mixed messages. Mm. On the one hand, they're being told they need to be really strong and need to provide. On the other hand, they can see women are getting more and more successful, although not yet as successful as men. Like, I think some of this manosphere content confuses the data. We're still far from where we need to be in terms of women. But, you know, we are no longer, you know, sitting in the kitchen. So, as often.
I'm going to be cooking dinner.
Yes, exactly.
The manosphere content is not designed to appeal to men who are already successful in a happy relationship.
Absolutely.
It's targeting men who
are lost and confused.
Left behind.
Ostracized. I mean, if you look at the vulnerability factors, it's, you know, it's often young men who have been bullied, who are failing in relationships, who are not getting girlfriends. The neurodivergent community is very vulnerable to this. So it's not the successful men. Mm. It's the men that are, you know, falling behind. So that's why we need to think about them, because they get fed this message that they need to be strong and aggressive and reject the feminist narrative, because that's the problem.
These types of online ideologies, now it's not just the manosphere, that can happen with, say, religious radicalization. It could be anything.
It's like a kind of grooming. Mm. That's how I see it.
And not all the content creators are male. There's an increasing number, particularly in the US, of female influencers who buy into this idea.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
And just, you know, that adds sort of fuel. Yeah, I should be at home, you know, that a man should be this. You know, men do.
I mean,
have
there's always been that.
Yeah.
That narrative, right? There's certain women who
got,
find
I
that
mean,
really
in
important.
Older generations online now, you've got the sort of the trad wife.
Oh, you mean like somebody who wants to find a rich guy and not.
Or just going back to very traditional values.
This is where I
values.
Belong.
Yeah.
Okay.
Some of it's rooted in religion. Yeah. Some of it's rooted in just a yearning to go back to the way things were.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. A lot of teenagers, not just boys, but I think particularly boys, spend an inordinate amount of time thinking about the opposite sex, being attracted to girls, wanting to get a girlfriend, wanting to experiment and all the rest of it. And the reality is you spend a lot of the time wanting a girlfriend or being attracted to some girl in your class or whatever and not sort of having any success there. Mm-hmm. And so what this offers is a way out of that situation. Not just it's normal, it happens. Not every girl's going to fall in love with you. Don't worry about it. You'll meet someone.
Yeah.
It's, if you can't find a girl, just go to the gym and start lifting weights and get huge and be on steroids.
Yeah, make yourself an alpha.
Yeah, exactly. We don't need women. And instead of so just true. These are the normal ebbs and flows of adolescence. And, you know, most people will work it out for themselves sooner or later if they're left alone.
And you know what's the heartbreaking, like, what adolescence really displays in what you just said, right? Which is, you know, go to the gym, make yourself start. Like, so the obvious and unfortunate kind of peak of that manosphere is, he obviously kills the girl, right? So that's the extreme act of violence, right? Where it's like, wow, that really reached a pinnacle. But what really got me in the series, the exact moment where I lost it, was when the therapist is about to leave. You know, the sessions are over and, you know, he's off to prison. And he said, do you like me? Mm. You know, yeah. Do you like me? Mm. And it was just heartbreaking that, like, the whole thing, if you take away the acts of violence and the woman hating and the be the alpha male and stuff, it exposes this deep vulnerability of just wanting any attention from the opposite sex, any validation. Yeah. And that part was, that really got me.
I think what most young men would benefit from is one or more influential male figures in the inspirational male figures in their life, whether that's their dad or a teacher or a coach or whatever. And I in this series, so the dad struggled, right? He was I think he was a plumber or an electrician, plumber. Full-time, busy, didn't have time, struggled. He'd taken the boy to football and boxing. He hadn't liked those things. Mm-hmm. Those were his ways of trying to do something together. It hadn't worked out. And the male police officer, his relationship with his son was, you know, he was busy, didn't really know how to communicate with him. The teachers were struggling. So there was this theme that the boys didn't have anyone to turn to. So the person they turned to was available 24/7 on their phone or their screen in their bedroom and just being funneled in there. And so I think if we don't act as those inspirations, then absolutely, social media will take care of it for us. Yeah. And we might not like the inspiration adults we get served up by social media.
So I'm just wondering, so obviously role model is a big thing for boys, even for girls, but for boys in particular. But let's say it is the father, you know, and the father still has, like the dad in adolescence, these different types of ideologies, like to be a man, you need to be sporty, you need to be tough, you need to do all of these things. So when there's a mismatch there, then how do you help develop that boy into a healthy young man?
My very fundamental solution in a boy that's the age he is in adolescence is, if I could, I'd protect them completely from that influence. They wouldn't have phones. They wouldn't have access to social media. I think it's utterly toxic thing in their lives. It's creeping in. There was a great article in the Times this weekend about how it's creeping into education. So all these e-learning companies that like, oh, children love to learn from apps. Do you use to get, you know, my kids both got iPads in school now. They learn increasingly through gamified type interfaces. It's just a way of getting us all on board with this stuff ruling our lives. So that would be the first thing. I would take the possibility of Andrew Tate being able to communicate with my son in any way off the table. Then you're left with, okay, there have always been bad influences, right? You know, that people thought that the Beatles were corrupting kids in the 60s, right? You know, there's always been that kids don't want to listen to their parents. They want to follow the cool person on TV or whatever. But I think if they don't have 24-hour access to it, if it's not hyper-personalized to them by an algorithm, as parents and as teachers, it's a bit easier for us to have our influence in that.
Yeah, and I think this idea that it takes a village, I think what's happening is that we're becoming more and more insular. And actually, it's so common that there is a mismatch between parents and children. Mm-hmm. And I think when I think about, you know, myself or people that I've worked with or communities that I've supported over the years, I mean, it goes through ebbs and flows with our children. Like, well, that we might go through a period where we're connecting really well, then we disconnect, then we reconnect. It's like any relationship. And so that's why you want to extend the community. You want, especially boys who are hitting these ages from sort of middle school, super complicated time for both boys and girls, but developmentally, it's when, you know, boys are really starting to get more feelings. They don't have the language because we just don't talk like that with boys enough. Mm. But if they had different people in their lives, different role models, be it, you know, either their sports coach or it could be an aunt, a cousin, it could be someone's, you know, husband, a friend, you know, different influences. They can see different ways of being a man. I love the idea of men's group and boys' groups. Mm. You know, we used to have a lot of scouts. I don't know what's happened to them. They don't happen so often. But I think it's, but with the right influences mm-hmm. and the right sort of language, I think it's a great thing to have more people involved in our parenting journey, because it's not always the right person. And especially through adolescence, where parents sort of drop down the hierarchy and get lower and lower and lower. That's why you need other people to be higher up on the hierarchy. You know, peers are always the priority, but it could be your fun aunt or uncle, or that you can call and say, oh, you know, dad's been a real jerk, you know, and you can commiserate.
Yeah.
And I think that we need to give permission for that, because that's just normal.
Yeah.
It really is. Mm. And so then they don't have to do it online. The reason they turn to some of these community online is because they give these recipes. They give answers. This is what you need to do. Come join us. You know, it's true. Life is, you know, awful. You know, men are struggling, etc. You know, there's really concrete answers to their problems, and they find their tribe, a sense of belonging, just like they join gangs. You know, yeah. My sister works with knife crime in London, and that's what's happening in London, but they're joining gangs.
Yeah.
And, you know, incredibly dangerous as that is. But who are the risk, the children that are at risk that to join gangs? I think it's very similar to the children that are at risk to listen to these online platforms. Mm-hmm. If you're connecting, chatting to your child, if your child feels safe to raise things that they're uncomfortable about with you or with someone in their community, they're less likely to get influenced and sort of, I'd like to think of it as grooming, into those communities and those narratives.
What about the types of friends your kids hang around with? Like, how much does that influence their behavior and what they do?
Yeah.
I know. What See, I feel like as parents, you could do everything right, but if they get in with the wrong kids, what can you do? Like, what can you do?
It's really difficult, really, isn't it? I think what you can do on that front is as much as possible, know who they're with and what they're doing, even if you're not there supervising it. So a great example in adolescence was that on the night that the boy committed the murder, they thought he was out with his friends, and he had been, but then they'd left each other. Get to know their parents so that you're all, you know, if there's an issue, at least you're all sort of on the same team if possible. Mm-hmm. I think if you really think they're in with the wrong crowd, you can try and foster new interests and nudge them gently in the right direction. But I don't think picking your kids' friends for them never works, right? They're if they're in with the wrong crowd, they're not going to listen to the fact that you think it's the wrong crowd. So I think that's really difficult.
So I'm hearing stories from my husband when he used to say that once their parents went to bed, they'd sneak out of the house, climb out the window and stuff. Then how do you know what your kid's doing?
Well, that's what I said earlier. I think that is what maybe our parents' generation were much better at doing. Mm. I saw a teenage boy the other day in my clinic, and we were going through his general health, and the big issue for him was that he was vaping, and he was really hopelessly addicted to vaping because very high nicotine content. Yeah. It's a real struggle for them to get off. And my son's only 11. He's not quite at that stage yet. I'm thinking, God, I would be freaking out.
Yes.
You know, it's illegal in Singapore. It's just, this is a disaster. The kid's otherwise completely fine, healthy. And the dad said to me, you know, when I was his age, I was going to the beach with my mates, we'd build a bonfire, we'd buy a couple of cases of beer, we'd smoke cigarettes. All of those things were completely stupid. But he doesn't have anything like that here, and he needs to experiment and push boundaries and take risks. Do I want him to be vaping? Of course I don't. Am I going to try and help him stop? Of course I am. But I'm not going to sacrifice my relationship with him. And I just thought, well, you know, I hope I can take that approach when I'm in the same situation. Because think about what we all, some of us may have been better behaved than others, but I reckon we all did stuff as teenagers.
Yeah.
We would be frowned upon if our own kids were doing it. So it's not new that they want to, and going out and killing someone's obviously just the very extreme end of the scale.
Of course. And the outcomes, actually, when you look at teenagers who misbehave, they become sort of more regulated and do better in early adulthood. The ones that don't struggle in early adulthood. So there's a function to it. Like, we are taking risks. I mean, our frontal lobe is malfunctioning, but it's an identity development stage. Like, we're testing. That's why they're testing boundaries with us as well at home. They're experimenting on, you know, the kind of music I want to listen to, my hairdo, you know, am I a sort of a Republican or a Democrat or actually a liberal? You know, that's all par for the course. Mm-hmm. And it's just a difficult ride for parents because we kind of have to sit on the side of the roller coaster and watch them go up and down. Mm. We don't want to be on the roller coaster with them. But we also don't want to keep an eye off them entirely because then that's neglect. Yeah. But there's a certain amount of it that needs to happen in order for them to come out the other end as a fully functioning adult or fairly functioning adult. Sometimes it takes up to the age of 30 for it to fully end the stage. But it's an important stage. It's got a developmental function. And we even see it in birds. We see it across the animal kingdom that adolescents take bigger risks. Mm. And boys are, you know, usually more risky than girls because of this developmental trajectory. And I do think it's, you know, something that there can be an even bigger mismatch with young people and parents at that stage, depending on our temperament. You know, if we are quite risk averse, then we're going to struggle more if we've got a child who's not as risk averse as us. And I think I love that, what your patient was saying, that the relationship should trump everything. Mm-hmm. Because at the end of the day, that's really the only thing we can keep a hold of. They will leave home. They'll make decisions for themselves. What we want is them to be able to talk to us mm-hmm. and feel safe. Mm-hmm. And that does begin the minute they're born. Like, I have seen really sad stories of parents who haven't worked on the relationship and then teenage hits. Mm. And it's late. Mm. It's late to be thinking about it. I don't think it's a lost cause. We can work on it. But we really need to be thinking, you know, at your stage, like, how do I involve my kids in conversations, in making decisions for themselves, developing that autonomy?
Yeah.
You know, obviously at that stage, you need to be holding them a bit closer than teenagers. But by the stage of, you know, by the age of teenage, you want to have some confidence in their decision making and go, I'm not sure this is a great idea, but I'll trust you and we'll talk about it later.
I like that. I think I'm going to have to start using that because my son's at the stage now where anything I say, anything I do, it's uncool. If I move his head to the side, he'll shake it. If I say, oh, that's a cool song, that's a shit song, Mum. You know? Yeah.
That's very healthy.
That's very healthy.
Wonderful. Exactly. That's a normal
100%.
Right, I'm doing something right.
Yeah. I will say, when you were talking about, you know, kind of the calculated risk and then later in life, the impact, right? I think about both my brother and I are, well, I snuck out to get my first tattoo. My brother was 18, so he didn't have to sneak, but I was underage getting mine. And I remember my parents being like, hey, like, you got the tattoo, that's a part of you now, and, you know, that's a choice you made, you're going to have to live with it. But they never tried to stop me, and they didn't punish me for it. And I remember thinking, I got away with it, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I got that tattoo, and I showed them. But what's interesting is, had they really hammered me on that, on the tattoo at that, I was 16 at that age, and, like, had they really hammered me down on the tattoo and really made a big freaking deal about it, I think that it wouldn't have been, like, it would have been something that broke our trust at that age, because at that age it was so important to me. You know, that one little tattoo, and I mean, we're both covered now, so spoiler alert. It's interesting because it's a risk in some ways, 100%. Right? And it's something that was, my parents obviously calculated the fact that if we go hard on this thing that really doesn't matter in the long run, it's going to affect their trust in me, both of us, you know, their trust in me moving forward. And I think that that's an example of, you know, again, submarine parenting at its best, meaning like they were not thrilled. But in the long run, I think little moments like that allowed us to build a deeper element of trust.
It's funny because obviously I'm Indian background and my husband is as well. And he got his ear pierced when he was a teenager. And his mum was...
Amen.
Yeah. His mum was not impressed. She actually... threw some snooker balls at him or tried to throw. So obviously we live in Asia. I guess, you know, the viewpoint in Asian culture is a little bit different, you know. Like Amanda says, like, you obviously live in an Asian household.
Yeah.
When we've been brought up in a particular environment, we kind of have this conflicting idea. You know, sometimes I'm thinking, oh my God, I really want to slap you because they're getting on my nerves. And that would be the Indian in me coming out. But then me growing up in the UK, I'm like, no, I can't do that. I need to talk to the
gentle parenting hat.
So how do you manage this then as a parent?
I mean, that's sort of outside of the whole, the boy issues that we've been talking here. That's just a fundamentally challenging thing of, around multiculturalism,
yeah.
right?
And
I guess maybe accepting that the fact that you have those different elements to your background is a net positive, even though they come with some struggles. I definitely think, I mean, we see it, we send our kids to international schools here where there's parents from all over the world. And you see the differing attitudes to various elements of parenting. Yeah. We've just got to work that out for ourselves. I think, you know, it is a challenge if you've been raised in one culture and now your kids are being raised in a different one. I think that's certainly a struggle I see. And I when we've done these talks, one of the frequent, we always see some new people coming to see us on the back of it. And one a frequent one I see would be parents from various Asian backgrounds going to a talk on boys, hearing a man who's grown up in a Western culture and a boy and coming wanting advice around that kind of thing, because maybe they think that I've got a different frame of reference on it for them. But it's not that I'm right and they're wrong, or vice versa. It's just trying to find a balance.
If you could share one thing with people listening today about how we can support boys going forward, what do you think would be sort of the biggest thing that you would like to put out there?
Well, I'm a big proponent of giving individuals, not just boys, permission to be.
Okay.
Like, I love this idea, and I think it's probably a bit far-fetched. I mean, you can't just be whatever you want to be all the time in every context. But this idea that making room for who you are and the feelings that you carry, and especially with boys, because that we know from the data that, you know, women are just as responsible for how we're educating boys emotionally. Like, we expect so much from our men. Like, if we look at the stats, women still expect to be provided for. Mm. Women still expect men to be stoic and have it all together. So I see a lot of men in my practice, and they come to me and they tell me I can't be vulnerable at home because that would freak my wife out. So we need to take responsibility for our own stereotypes. Like, what stereotypes are we carrying around us? And I'll put my hand up that I had lots of stereotypes. I still do. I'm sure some of them are not as conscious as I'd like them to be. So really allowing boys to express more vulnerable emotions, not pressuring them, like my boys tell me all the time, enough with the feelings. I'm fine, mummy. But I think to make more room for that, make more room, permission to be who they are, be it, you know, a little more impulsive than we'd like to, a little more reactive, but even a little more emotional. Because I think we find it hard to see vulnerability in boys and men. And so how do we make room for that?
That's a tough one, isn't it? How about yourself?
So my one thing, not to go, I don't want to go back over stuff we've already spoken about. So a new one would be trying to bring a bit more humor and positivity. So these are serious topics. Yeah. We should take them seriously. But we have a tendency to speak about them very seriously. And most men do their best communicating amongst each other by constantly either being funny or trying to be funny.
Yeah.
Facts.
And a lot of these influencers will use that sort of almost silliness and humor to win boys over. And we need to remember sometimes have a bit of a laugh and a joke with them well. I played golf with three other guys on Wednesday last week, and I got home and saw my wife in the evening. She said, she knows them. She said, any news?
Updates.
Yeah.
No, not really.
Not a one.
She's like, how long were you playing for? I was like, 5 hours.
Yeah.
Any news?
Nope.
No? Don't think so.
Yes.
We
so
just
true.
Kind of, I don't know, joked around, sort of took the mickey out of each other, whatever it was. So I think those celebrating those forms of communication is not just frivolous. They actually have value, and making it a bit more joyful and fun sometimes. It's not always easy, but yeah, that would be my one.
I love that. I'm going to remember that. My son does the older one, he loves to make jokes. The other day, I was using Siri to send a message to my helper to ask her to prepare something. As I had just finished, she decided to say, bum, 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 bum. So obviously when Siri's repeating the message back to me, it was, oh, please, can you get the pasta on? Bum, 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 bum. And they were all in hysterics. And I think, you know, I need to remember that.
That's important.
It often falls on the mum to not be that person, yeah, right? So we were on holiday over Easter. And on the first morning, my wife said the kids were doing something annoying at breakfast. And my wife said, guys, I don't want to be the person all holiday who's just saying no, 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 no. And me and the kids just fell about laughing because of course that's not her fault, you know. Yeah. But I need to be more of the bad cop as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think we need to remember to laugh and have fun with them.
No, that's so brilliant. True. Well, thank you both so much for coming today. I feel like this is such an important conversation and has given us so much food for thought. You know, I feel in order to help raise boys so that they are emotionally strong and connected, we do need to listen to them, speak to them, and be there for them. So thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
All right, let's talk about strength training. It is one of the most powerful things you can do for your body, especially in your 40s.
It's true, it's not always easy to build strength, but it's vital. Strength training will help keep your metabolism firing, strengthen your bones, and makes daily tasks way easier. Plus, it gives you that extra confidence in your body.
Exactly. It's tough work, but it's so worth it. And that's where Great Moves comes in. They'll guide you through the process, help you build strength the right way, and keep you motivated. No gimmicks, just real results.
It's time to stop coasting. Strength training isn't just about building muscle. It's about building resilience and feeling strong every day. And Great Moves is here to help you do exactly that.
And we've got an exclusive offer just for our audience. Use code TFF30 at moves.great.com for $20 off your trial class or 50% off any 5-session starter pack.
Guys, you know we love coffee. And if you want to show us some love, you know you can always get us one.
Just visit buymeacoffee.com/the40s formula.
Cheers.
Before we go, please remember to hit subscribe and take a moment to support the 40s formula by leaving a review on your favorite podcast platform.
Your reviews will help us to reach more people and allow us to continue to bring valuable content. It should only take a moment, and it's a free way for you to support the show.
You can also stay updated with the 40s Formula by following us on Instagram at the 40s Formula, all one word. We share behind-the-scenes insights, episode updates, and much more, so please be sure to hit that follow button.
We appreciate your time and support. Thank you for being part of this community, and we'll be back next week for more empowering conversations with inspiring guests.
Bye. Bye.
We have disallowed males from the studio, and I'm not kidding. Like, literally, we've done it on purpose.
We've said no to so many males. So you
That's why you got a problem with boys.
Yeah, exactly.
What's the problem with boys?
Us.
Why do they feel alienated?
Exactly.
Because they don't get invited on podcasts.
Yeah.
This is the first. Really cool.
And it's been something that that's intentional, right? Like, we have not wanted to have men on the podcast because we position ourselves as a women's health podcast with female experts talking to women. But this was important enough that
thank you.
Yeah. So season 5. So whatever, you know. Yeah. Oh, well, wow, technically, you'll be season 6. So 61 episodes later.
Wow. Welcome. Done. Oh, this is an important one to have a man in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean,
for sure.
That's. Like,